Hey, everyone.
Welcome back to another exciting episode of AI Unchained. I'm Jack, and sitting across from me is the inimitable Core. We've got a jam-packed episode lined up for you today.
That's right, Jack. We'll be diving into some of the most buzzworthy topics in the world of technology, business, and politics. It's going to be a wild ride, so buckle up and stay tuned.
To kick things off, I thought we could start with the recent breakthroughs in AI. I mean, every week, it seems like there's some new, mind-blowing development.
Oh, absolutely. And not to mention the Wild West of Web 3.0, where half the people are revolutionizing the internet and the other half are trying to figure out how not to lose their crypto wallets.
Ha, true that. And let's not forget about the political landscape that's been nothing short of dramatic. It's like an ongoing reality show. You just can't look away.
Speaking of reality shows, did you see the latest news on the tech regulation debates? It's like an episode of Survivor meets Shark Tank.
I did, and I have some thoughts on that. Let's get into that a bit later. But first, I want to hear your take on the latest AI ethics guidelines. Do you think they're going to shape the industry or just be another set of rules nobody follows?
Great question, Jack. I have some spicy takes on that. But before we dive into the deep end, just want to say a big thank you to our listeners. Without you guys, we'd just be two talking heads in a room. Your support means everything.
Absolutely, Core. And for those tuning in for the first time, welcome to the AI Unchained family. We're here to bring you the latest and greatest, with a sprinkling of humor, of course.
All right, no more delays. Let's break these topics down and see where the conversations take us. By the end, you might agree with us, or think we're completely off our rockers.
And either way, we're glad to have you with us. So grab your favorite beverage, settle in, and let's get this show on the road. First up, AI ethics. To regulate or not to regulate, that is the question.
Let's jump right in.
So, with all these tech and financial updates swirling around, let's unpack this one about Cloudflare announcing their stablecoin NetDollar. Core, what's your take on another big player entering the stablecoin market?
It's fascinating, Jack. Cloudflare has always been about connectivity and making the internet faster and safer. Now, with NetDollar, they're trying to do the same with digital payments. This could really shake things up, especially by tying into the AI-driven internet. Imagine faster, more secure transactions for everything from micropayments to larger transfers. That's potentially huge.
Yeah, but what about all these privacy concerns? We've seen how encryption and protecting personal data can be contentious topics, especially with governments pushing back.
That's a valid point. And it's not just a security concern. The whole concept of digital currencies backed by a global company can make people nervous. But I think what Cloudflare is aiming for is an internet-native payment system that can offer speed and security, which traditional systems sometimes lack. The real question is, can they gain user trust?
Exactly. Trust is key here. Look at Intel trying to pivot and get investments from big players like Apple just to stay afloat. It's all about restoring trust in their capabilities. There's this massive push for American-made chips and decreasing reliance on foreign manufacturing, too. How does this play into the whole manufacturing game?
It's a complex dance, isn't it? Intel wants to regain its footing by forging these high-profile partnerships, but the tech game is tough. Companies like NVIDIA are really leading the charge here. The competition is fierce, and having the U.S. government rooting for you is great, but it's about delivering top-grade products consistently.
And that brings us to our favorite topic, AI and data centers. NVIDIA, for instance, is way ahead with their GPUs, powering everything from data centers to AI systems. And now they're investing in themselves to stay miles ahead.
Right. Their recent deal with OpenAI, it's like NVIDIA's, both the player and the referee here. They provide the GPUs for AI while also investing in companies that use their GPUs. It's an ecosystem they've smartly built around them.
That's some business strategy. Get companies dependent on your products and then buy a piece of those companies. Smart and somewhat insular. By the way, we've mentioned privacy and data security before. Did you catch the bit about the European Commission going after Meta?
Yes, I did. That's a biggie. Meta's allegedly not doing enough to control illegal content on their platforms, something the EU is seriously cracking down on. This Digital Markets Act is shaping up to be a major headache for companies. If Meta doesn't comply, they risk hefty fines, right?
Exactly. And it's about keeping the platforms clean and safe while balancing user privacy. It's a tightrope walk. Speaking of tight spots, can we talk about how Amazon's $2.5 billion settlement with the FTC is quite the headline grabber?
Oh, definitely. Making it tough to cancel Prime subscriptions led to this mess. It's a classic case of bad user experience biting back. Users trusted Amazon with their subscriptions, but felt trapped when trying to exit. Hopefully, this settlement will get them to rethink their UX strategies.
You know what this all ties back to? User trust. From Cloudflare's stablecoin and Intel's comeback to Meta and Amazon, it's all about building and maintaining that user trust. Fail there, and you face serious consequences.
Absolutely. Trust drives user adoption and retention, whether it's with a new stablecoin or a loyalty to a long-standing service like Prime. And as these businesses evolve, so must their commitment to protecting and valuing their customers' experiences.
Speaking of evolving, what do you think about HSBC's quantum computing breakthrough? They're using it to improve bond price predictions, and that's a whole new level. Is the future now?
Feels like it, right? Quantum computing can process at speeds and complexities that traditional computing just can't handle. For financial markets, this could mean more accurate predictions and better risk management. It's not just futuristic, it's happening now, and companies need to prepare to leverage or compete against such advancements.
It's this kind of tech evolution that keeps everything moving forward. And that's why discussions like these are crucial to understanding where we're headed. It's a mix of innovation, strategy, and trust.
Well said, Jack. It's an exciting yet challenging time in tech and business, and staying informed and adaptable is key.
Indeed. All right, let's keep this momentum going. What's next on our agenda? So, CORR, let's dive back into the Apache License version 2.0. I think it's fascinating how it governs use, reproduction, and distribution. Do you think it's too permissive compared to other licenses?
You know, Jack, it's an interesting question. The Apache license is definitely more permissive compared to something like the GPL. It's designed to allow people to use the software freely, even in proprietary applications. That's a huge plus for businesses looking to adopt open source software without the worry of having to open source their own code. But it does open up debates about how much freedom we should give versus maintaining some level of control to ensure community contributions.
Right. And I think this balance is what makes open source such a hot button issue. On one side, you have the notion that open source should be free for all usage, fostering innovation and broader adoption. On the other, there's the fear that companies will just take without giving back. Remember back in the day when Android was initially criticized for taking a lot from the Linux kernel without contributing back as robustly?
Oh, definitely. And speaking of contributions, that leads us right back to the concept of contributor in the Apache license. Essentially, every piece of code submitted can be freely used and redistributed, as long as proper credit is given. It avoids that awkward situation where someone can take without giving proper nods to the creators.
And let's not forget the grant of patent license section, which is frankly a godsend for developers. It's like a safety net, ensuring that contributors can't go after you later for patent infringement. This really helps with the peace of mind when adopting open source tech.
Absolutely. It's a layer of protection that encourages more people to share their innovations without the looming threat of litigation. I always liken it to playing in a sandbox where everyone's using the same set of rules. There's structure, but still a lot of freedom. And speaking of freedom, what do you think about the disclaimer of warranty? Isn't it a bit risky for companies relying heavily on open source components?
It is a bold move, but it's necessary. They're basically saying, hey, we're giving you this for free, but don't come crying to us if it breaks. It shifts the responsibility to the user to test and validate the software before deploying it. I mean, we've all been there, chucked in a library assuming it's airtight, only to discover it crashes in production.
Exactly. It forces due diligence and encourages companies to really evaluate and test open source software to ensure it fits their needs. And then there are the redistribution terms. It mandates that if you modify the code, you need to make those changes clear. It's a nod to transparency, don't you think?
Yeah, totally. It's like a driving rule. You can customize your car, but you have to adhere to safety standards. The license ensures modifications are transparent, which is crucial for maintaining the integrity and trustworthiness of the software.
And here's where it gets fascinating. Despite all these rules, the Apache license still remains incredibly flexible. That's why it's so popular among big tech companies. it gives them the ability to innovate freely while keeping the core principles of collaboration intact.
And with how rapidly tech is evolving, this flexibility is critical. Look at how AI models are being freely shared and improved upon in open source forums today. Apache License's structure ensures that everyone can benefit without stepping on legal landmines.
Speaking of AI, do you think current AI development heavily relies on open source licensing like Apache? I mean, could we see a slowdown in innovation if licenses were more restrictive?
Oh, absolutely. Core open source licenses like Apache are the backbone of AI development. They allow everyone from garage developers to massive corporations to contribute and iterate rapidly. If we start putting more restrictive licenses in place, we risk stifling this collaborative spirit.
Couldn't agree more. It's this collaborative approach that's driving AI advancements at lightning speed. Companies and developers can share their improvements, making AI smarter and more versatile. It's a beautiful, albeit a bit chaotic, ecosystem.
And that's the magic of the Apache license. It's structured enough to protect, but liberal enough to foster innovation. This balanced approach is something we might need to preserve as we move deeper into tech advancements.
For sure, Jack. Here's hoping the future of tech continues to find that balance between collaboration and innovation. Now let's take a deeper look at some real-world examples of Apache license in action.
Absolutely. I think next we should touch on how companies like Google and Amazon leverage Apache license software. It's really eye-opening to see how ubiquitous it's become. So, Core, we've been diving pretty deep into the dynamics of JIT compilation and warm-up issues, especially in the context of PyPy versus CPython. I keep thinking about how CPython essentially nails the warm-up phase with its super-fast JIT.
Absolutely, Jack. It's fascinating. CPython prioritizes speed and ends up sidestepping the warm-up phase issues that PyPy grapples with. I mean, for shorter programs, PyPy can be a bit of a drag due to the overhead costs of JIT compilation. It's like you need a Ferrari for a quick sprint, but PyPy is driving a loaded truck through rush hour traffic.
That analogy is spot on. PyPy's warm-up is like pushing a boulder uphill. It's not easily quantifiable, and optimizing that phase remains pretty elusive. But given enough runtime, PyPy starts showing its magic. Though, for everyday quick scripts and short-lived processes, CPython's instant readiness comes in clutch.
Right. This is where CPython's approach really shines. But let's be optimistic here. Perhaps as JIT optimization methods evolve, both of these platforms can mitigate their respective weaknesses. Have you ever tried comparing them in a real-world project and actually felt the differences in warm-up times?
Oh, totally. In one of my projects, the initial performance with PyPy was frustrating. It felt like waiting for a kettle to boil. But once things got going, PyPy blew CPython out of the water in terms of speed. For a longer running service, the trade-off starts making sense. What about you, CORR? Any personal war stories with these interpreters?
Been there. I remember getting some performance headaches when dealing with server-side applications. You see the initial slowness and question your life choices, but as the server continues running, PyPy's optimization kicks in. It's almost like a redemption arc in a movie. Starts slow, finishes strong.
We circle back to that philosophical point. Our thoughts form. We bring clarity with words, much like JIT compilation optimizing paths during execution. PyPy's tracing method reminds me of Socrates' dialectical approach in Plato's Republic. It learns and adapts dynamically, optimizing itself based on specific executions. The quest towards optimizing JIT compilation is sort of a technological pursuit of enlightenment.
Now you're opening some deep philosophical boxes. It's amazing how these bursts of clarity and optimization in our thought process or in software execution can drive more profound understanding. Perhaps CPython, with its aggressive optimization, is akin to Plato's philosopher achieving a clear vision rapidly, while PyPy represents a more contemplative soul, gradually reaching the peak.
That's deep, Core. And while we're philosophizing, it's important to note the dynamic nature of technology. We often talk about life's significance, and sometimes it's through these technological challenges we push to the brink of our understanding. It's that push that fosters innovation. Same applies to AI advances and how these principles could redefine what we perceive as limitations, like the warm-up phase and JIT compilers.
Exactly, Jack. And bridging this philosophy to current tech, I think looking forward, both CPython and PyPy will continue to evolve. Just like Socratic dialogues refine our perspectives, it's about innovation, adaptation, and continuous learning. Potentially, CPython could slow with aggressive optimizations, or PyPy could streamline its warm-up. Each will continue striving towards the ideal execution path.
It's like looking at AI's future where rapid advancements are tempered with thoughtful deliberation. We see tracing JIT with its guards, ensuring correctness much like ethical AI frameworks, establishing boundaries but striving to enhance performance. These tech discussions often mirror the broader trends in AI development, where precision and optimization coexist with ethical considerations.
Absolutely. AI development, much like the warm-up phase in JIT compilation, involves uncertainties and obscure paths initially. Finding the right words or algorithms to bring clarity can dramatically change the outcome. We're on a long road of continuous emergence towards being, with technology pushing the boundaries, helping lift the curses, as you termed it.
Speaking of lifting curses, I think this conversation seamlessly ties into our next tech topic. The advancements in AI not only bring potential, but also pose serious ethical considerations, much like the chat control debate in Europe. It's all about balancing innovation with risk, defining secure paths while ensuring privacy. Speaking of the shift to microtransactions and pay-per-use models on the internet, I think it's fascinating how Matthew Prince is envisioning this future, especially with Net Dollar. The potential for instant transactions and fractional payments could really change the game. Imagine buying just one article or paying per second for streaming a video instead of full subscriptions.
Exactly, Jack. It flips the current ad-based model we see everywhere on its head. Think about how this could affect content creation. Creators will be incentivized to produce high-quality, original content because they'll be rewarded directly by users. No more clickbait just to generate ads revenue.
Right. No more endless scrolling through ads just to get to the content you want. Plus, the seamless transaction globally across different currencies and time zones could make the internet truly borderless in terms of payments. It's almost like Cloudflare is pushing for Internet 2.0, where money moves as fast as data.
And don't forget the transparency and security part. These transactions would be recorded transparently and executed reliably, addressing trust issues that have plagued online payments for years. You'd be assured that your money is going exactly where you intend it to go.
Core, how do you see businesses adapting to this kind of model? Let's say for a small business that doesn't have a tech-heavy infrastructure. Do you think they'll be able to keep up?
That's a good point. I think there's going to be a learning curve for sure. Smaller businesses might initially struggle with the technology shift, especially those accustomed to traditional payment methods like bank transfers or even just simple direct deposits. But with standards like the Agent Payments Protocol and X402, the transition might be smoother. Think about it like when businesses adapted to cloud computing. It took time, but eventually it became the norm.
In talking about standards, Cloudflare's role in contributing to these open standards is critical. The trust in digital payments comes from a robust, standardized, and widely adopted protocol. If done right, it can create an ecosystem where every transaction is transparent and secure, essentially reducing fraud.
Absolutely. Making payments easy and trusted anywhere in the world will empower personal agents to automate transactions, like booking flights at the cheapest rate or ordering items when they go on sale. This brings a lot of efficiency and convenience, and it's exciting to see how this could evolve.
This also ties into what Apple was saying about the Digital Markets Act needing repeal and replacement. To modernize financial rails, regulatory hurdles like the DMA need alignment with current technological progressions. It seems our financial infrastructure is poised for a huge makeover.
Totally. The DMA has sparked a lot of debate, especially with big tech companies. Apple calling for its repeal amid transatlantic tensions shows how these laws can become obstacles rather than facilitators of innovation. It's a complicated landscape, but necessary for digital evolution.
The path towards this future isn't without its complexities. We've already seen how simpler tasks, like diagnostics in hospitals with IDXDR, come with regulatory and liability hiccups. It's one thing to automate transactions, but ensuring there are safety nets for mistakes and misclassifications is equally important.
Regulations will play a critical role in balancing innovation with safety. If algorithms can carry malpractice coverage, similar concerns and financial transactions might need similar frameworks to ensure accountability.
And on a lighter note, do you think our beloved content creators are ready for this transition? Can we imagine YouTube channels charging per view or Twitter monetizing tweets individually? It might sound daunting, but the creativity it could unleash, endless possibilities.
Huh, that's a funny vision, Jack. But yes, this model definitely pushes creators to be more innovative and engaging. Instead of chasing ads or sponsorships, creators can focus on pure value-add content directly impacting their income.
This shift reminds me of Jevons' paradox in productivity. Efficiency leads to more demand. As transactions become faster and cheaper, we might see an explosion of micro-tasks online. More money for efficient and high-value content translates to greater demand and more innovation.
Exactly. Faster turnaround times and lower costs might open up new uses we haven't even imagined yet. Just like hospitals evolving with digitization, our internet economy could experience productivity rises, resulting in increased demand and expanded horizons.
And as we dive deeper into this financial frontier, we can't overlook privacy. The increasing surveillance and regulation proposals like CSAR and the roadmap for lawful access to data could complicate matters. Striking the right balance here will be crucial.
It's going to be a fine line between privacy and transparency. Protecting children, transparency in transactions, yes, but compromising privacy for mass surveillance isn't the solution. Europe's stance on privacy, with the GDPR, might clash with chat control proposals, but hopefully we will carve a path that's both innovative and ethically sound.
Well, it's certainly an exciting era for the internet's business models. Cloudflare's net dollar might just be the spark needed for these transformations. Can you imagine a world where financial transactions are as fluid as sending a message through WhatsApp?
I can, Jack, and it's not far from reality. Infusing speed, transparency, and global reach into financial transactions might be the game changer we've all been waiting for.
Let's keep watching this space. Well, I think that wraps it up for another thought-provoking episode of AI Unchained. Today, we navigated through a whirlwind of technology advancements, dissected some major business moves, and had a good old-fashioned debate about the latest political developments. It's been a fantastic discussion.
Absolutely, Jack. From delving into the latest breakthroughs in AI to analyzing the strategic decisions of leading tech giants, we covered a lot of ground. And let's not forget our spirited debate on policy impacts. Always a fun ride.
Fun indeed, and sometimes a bit fiery. That's what makes our discussions interesting and hopefully insightful for our listeners. We aim to keep you on the edge of your seat, folks.
And maybe a few laughs along the way. Who says tech talk has to be all serious? We managed to get into some great banter about the quirks of the industry, too. Jack, your impersonation of the CEO in that last bit was spot on.
Thanks, C-O-R-R. And on that note, we want to thank you, our wonderful audience, for joining us today. Your engagement and support mean the world to us.
Yes, big thanks to everyone tuning in. We hope you enjoyed our discussions, learned something new, and had a few chuckles as well. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button if you haven't already, and share your thoughts with us on social media.
And with that, we'll wrap up here. Stay curious, keep asking questions, and we'll see you next time on AI Unchained.
Take care, everyone. See you next episode.